1212. The sound of the radio static blended like an aluminum blanket, with the sound of the rain tapping rhythmically on the cold, corrugated metal roof of the temporary communication hut. The early evening fog was silently invading the hills of the sparsely populated Northern Territory, and soon only the tips of the pines would be visible. The small hut was heated by a small fire, made from a makeshift chimney made from empty tins of army-grade beef stew. Where a screw had been turned to fix the metal roof to the wooden beam in the center of the room, this had become a capillary, the source, a liquid keyhole for the drips of water, which were slowly turning the dirt floor into mud. The soldier tapped the radio in bored frustration with his swollen red hands, hoping the shock would encourage a message, a voice, just a simple hello, to break through the monotonous static. But the tap changed nothing. He stood up and pried a glimpse through the peephole on the plywood wall with his binoculars. He scanned the descending countryside and the mountains across the valley that appeared to be floating in misty cotton. The rain didn't look like it was going to stop, and the soldier hoped he wouldn't need to use a toilet until it did. He took off his steel helmet and placed it under the drips to collect the rainwater, and he checked that his machine gun was dry. He slipped on a woolen beret, and then he put the uncomfortable headphones back on. There was a strange peace in the monotony of the unsteady radio sounds. The soldier thought about the small infantry in the valley below, taking cover under the dripping pines, waiting for his light signal to move further on north. And he concentrated on the static lullaby. The The unpopulated border was under threat of invasion, and rumors circulated among the men that the Americans had already penetrated the country, and this filled everyone with jittery nerves and dreamless sleep. In a few hours' time, history might engrave another banal tragedy into a collective tombstone that none of the men wished to be a part of. He thought about his wife, who had gone to the countryside in the east with her parents. A quiet village with a 12th century mosque, which normally would be safe from bombing. A town where journalists would be based. He had treated her offhandedly when they left the house to join the camouflaged flatbed army truck that had unleashed a powerful klaxon, a lighthouse signaling danger, ordering him to be quick. He regretted the clumsiness of his departure, his insensitive tongue, the unambitious fashion in which he articulated his fears, the muffled thought that he and she might be separated for eternity by an untimely and uncontrollable death and never see each other again. He felt like running away to another country, to a place with no allegiance, to a non-political oasis where they could lie arm in arm, breast to chest, cheek to cheek, drifting into each other's dreams like the characters in children's books. But he had already left her when the horn blew. He spat out an offhand reminder that fate was probably against them, that she had not to forget to hide her rings and jewelry in the seam of her coat. He insisted that she should leave the village before the mayor's order was given to help ensure a smooth voyage without the thousands of others that would wait like sheep and all leave together and block the roads. He was glad they didn't have children. He took her in his arms, and she felt stiff and lifeless, like an old life jacket, a hallway carpet. Her hands touched the muscles in his back, but she didn't caress the cloth. She held him as if he were a wooden puppet, with the hands of a saddened Pinocchio, like a wooden clamp. And then they separated, tears in her eyes, red bags under his. He didn't say he loved her, even though it was the only thing in his mind. The pressure had blown his fuses. The unreality of the events blinded his emotions. He moved in a fractal of motion, his feelings blocked in his shoulders. He left as though he was leaving a dentist's office, like a mule being tugged, like a toy car with broken wheels. And he shifted his way backwards out of the house, turning his head this way and that, making his way into the back of the army truck with two or three others. And he stared back at the house as the vehicle revved up and drew away, turning the road into fumes and dust. And she didn't even bother to stay outside and watch the truck disappear. Exhausted from stress, she just waved, turned and walked limply back into the single-story house. She had disappeared, like incense. A scarf in the wind, a handshake in a bus, a nail in a wood shop. Like a candle left near a fire, like film projected upon smoke. And he was disappearing, like a train, water down the drain, fishing bait, a pigeon, an endangered species. He was trying to be brave, pretending to be, and in doing so, he had failed her. He had denied his own heart, and this put a veto in hers. The fuzzy sound of the radio signal suddenly turned very sour and melancholic. The grizzle no longer felt calm. It sounded unalterable, untouchable, and cruel. He thought the signal was possibly being scrambled. That the Americans were using their sophisticated technology to cut him off from the rest of the planet. That the static was actually a representation of presence. A voice then broke in. He didn't understand a word.
Don't worry, that guy's gotta see us. These were the confident last words of the brilliant young Hollywood star James Dean. He piloted his Porsche 550 Spartan race car toward a date with death along a lonely stretch of California two-lane blacktop, Route 466. Don't worry, that guy's got a seat. The year, 1955. The day, September 30th. The time? Now. First star of our show is a little bastard, James Dean's racing Porsche. He named it after himself and had his racing number 130 painted on it. Which brings us to the second star. Stuntman, former race driver, Colin Seagrave. Colin Seagrave. He will drive our replica of James Dean's car. I myself shall play the role of James Dean's racing mechanic, Rolf Wudrich, sent over from the Porsche factory in Zuffenhausen, Germany. Now, this mechanic was himself fated to die in a car crash in Germany 26 years later. The third, and in some ways, most important player, the college student, Donald Turnip Seed, played by movie stuntman Brett Trask.
Well, this was a research mission, a shuttle-alone research mission. Most of the space flights of the space shuttle in the last almost 3 years have been to the International Space Station to build that laboratory up in the sky. This is a dedicated mission that was only to do science. It had been on the books for about 2.5 years. This mission was, in fact, ordered by Congress. There were some congressmen early on who were concerned that in all the effort to build the space station and all the engineering, space science would be neglected. The biggest issue at launch was security. You had the first Israeli astronaut. You had the fact that the shuttle is considered a prime terrorist target. And there was unusual security. There were military people around the Kennedy Space Center. Jet fighter airplanes, off in the distance flying. There were security zones in the water around the Cape and in the air around the Cape, and it turned out there was no incident. It was a very clean launch, and there were no security problems at the launch. This is an extraordinarily long mission, four shuttles. Most shuttle missions are 10 days or so. The idea was to do intense science in that 16-day mission, and they did. The crews worked in two shifts. It was 24-hour-a-day science, a red crew and a blue crew. They divided these seven people up. And all the equipment was being used all the time. And they did experiments in biology, in space, medicine. The idea was to do intense science in that 16-day mission, and they did. The crews worked in two shifts. It was 24-hour-a-day science, a red crew and a blue crew. They divided these seven people up. And all the equipment was being used all the time. And they did experiments in biology, in space, medicine. The idea was to do intense science in that 16-day mission, and they did. the crews worked in two shifts. It was 24-hour-a-day science. A red crew and a blue crew. They divided these seven people up, and all the equipment was being used all the time. And they did experiments in biology.
There won't be any problem whether I go or I'm going. I'm gone. We were coming up onto the highway in a blur of neon and cotton candy circles. The road was empty. 4 a.m. We were high and happy. Angie and Ivan had taken some ecstasy, and they were laughing like kids as we soared down the middle of the roadway. The absolute lack of cars had surprised us all. Even in the other direction, only a truck had passed during the last few minutes. Ivan pushed down on the accelerator, and we all counted joyfully as the speed increased. 120, 130, 140, 150, 160, 162, 165, 167. Yeah! The radio was turned up loud. The desolation of the periphery made it seem like the VIP room in the back of some huge distorted club. Angie kept changing the radio station. Now DJ Volta's booming drum and bass broke through, ricocheted inside the car. I started to roll a spliff, and Angie leaned over to Ivan and whispered something into his ear, laughed and rolled down her window. The air felt cool and fresh, and suddenly Ivan put the gear shift into neutral and he cut off the engine. We coasted along in a strange space between pounding music and rolling silence, feeling the weight and inertia of the car carrying us under our feet. We're landing on the moon! Ivan said, grinning, staring straight ahead. And we coasted down a light, slight decline on the highway, still completely alone. And I finished rolling the joint, but I felt paranoid because, the fucked out of my mind, I realized the cameras filming the periphery would be more curious about our lack of speed than an excess of it. We must have coasted 500 meters since he had cut the engine, and we're now cruising at a comfortable 100 an hour. But we were getting slower. We angled into a turn which opened up into a flat straightaway. We were all so excited that the car was stopping, slowing down like the wheel in Russian roulette. And I even kept one eye fixed almost permanently on the rear view mirror. And I said nothing. And Angie kept laughing. And I even started to grin. And then I lit up a spliff. Ivan rolled down his window and shut off the radio. At about 40 kilometers an hour, we all exploded, laughing again. And then Ivan opened the door. And then Angie threw hers open. I looked behind me to make sure nothing was going to slam into us. But there was still nothing there. I flung open both doors in the back. We must have looked amazing on the surveillance video camera. Like a digital turtle inching its way across the white lines, which grew longer and grayer as we came to a halt. I don't believe it. Angie said with red eyes. They must have closed the highway for repairs or something. And Ivan glanced in the mirror one more time and then get out of the car. Angie passed me the camera. It's in the glove compartment. He said this with a strange curve of authority in his tone. Then she pressed in the camera. And he started to take pictures of the car and us in it from all angles. I felt nervous. No one was in the driver's seat. If we had to move fast, all the doors were open. And Ivan was outside taking pictures of us. And he was too far away from the car to get back if something happened. If something appeared on the horizon at high speed. And then Angie got out. And as if she was being directed in a film by Russ Meyers, she slipped off her t-shirt. And she angled herself over the hood of the car in the style of a crude men's locker room calendar. And stared straight at eyes, And he moved in with the camera. And he shot about a dozen pictures of her rolling around in the warm metal hood.
This is great! This is fucking great!
I decided to get out of the car. The windscreen seemed like the video game in an arcade or a soft porno site on the internet. I felt so awkward looking at them from the inside of the car. And getting out, I offered Andy a spliff. I had never seen her naked before. But out here on the periphery, with the Daewoo building dwarfing us, it seemed natural and normal. And she eased herself off the engine hood and took the joint. And then she asked Ivan why he had stopped taking pictures. And she arched her back and looked at the sky and took a long drag on the smoke. And he cocked the shutter and he moved the camera to his eye and he framed us. And then he waited. Pointing the camera and waiting. I wondered when the fuck he was going to release the shutter. I wondered, is this going to be the last photograph taken of me? Standing next to a topless girl smoking drugs in the highway at night. Wouldn't the family be surprised? A lot of their questions would never be able to be answered because they weren't really based in reality. This was just fiction. Real life fiction. Black Safichi and Angie McQueen were killed on the periphery at 4:15 a.m. I glanced at Angie's tits and put my arm around her. Click, clack, bam, Kodak.
Bam, Kodak. Bam, Kodak. Bam, Kodak.
The shutter seemed to thunder.
Shutter seemed to thunder. Shutter seemed to thunder. Shutter seemed to thunder.
He took others. I took my arm back from around her. Two more frames froze the moment. Toward or away. How would they know when they looked through the snapshots? I moved to the other side of the car to create some space between me and them. Ivan took the tail end of the joint from Angie, and I turned and looked back down the order route, and I almost shit it. Two headlights under a fire about 700 yards away, but it wasn't moving. Only a matchbox in size. Burning like barbecue charcoal. Lighter fluid increased. Shit, look at that! They both turned and Ivan automatically continued to take pictures. We better go, I insisted. Then Angie got back into the car and put on her t-shirt. And then I got in. But Ivan stayed outside, staring at the distant fire. Like a rabbit hypnotized by the binocular lights.
Let's go, Ivan!
I slammed the door closed, and I screamed again,
Ivan, let's go!
And then Ivan began to walk toward the fire. And with each step away from us, Angie became more hysterical.
Ivan, come on, let's go, Ivan! Ivan, let's go, she cried to him.
And then Ivan turned and took another picture of the back of the car as he reapproached the vehicle. And then he opened the boot and he pulled out a bottle of water, which looked as if it had been there too long. And then he got back into the car. But he left the door open.
He left the door open.
He left the door open. He left the door open. He left the door open. He put the camera on the cigarette stained dashboard. Let's make a poetic gesture. Let's make this a moment that we will remember the rest of our lives. We are united only by memory. Every day we remember where to go, what to do, who our friends are, who we love. But all this can get forgotten in the sameness and normality. Something special has to mark the moment. We remember the mountains before the parks. We remember the back road deviations before we remember the regular streets. And then he paused. I'm bored by my life. All I do is work. Try to get a better paying position. Bigger apartment. Sick of searching for a parking space every night and finding tickets on the windshield in the morning. You know what I want to do? I want to burn the car. I've got 7 pictures left in this camera. And 1.5 liters of petrol in this bottle. Angie, you make us a spliff. And then we'll take off all our clothes. We'll set fire to the car and dance around it, and I'll take pictures. Angie's eyes and mouth hung wide open, blocked like a sink. 2 dark planets suspended over a black hole. But your car. Fuck my car. It's not worth much anyway. Just imagine the paper tomorrow. 3 people, after leaving the club last night, stopped their car on the periphery. Dance naked, then set fire to the car and protest the boredom that life is offering them today. What will you do with the pictures, I asked. There won't be any pictures. I'm gonna throw the camera back into the car just before it explodes.
there won't be any problem whether I go or I'm going. I'm gone.
Hey, hi, this is Black Safichian. I'd like to say hello and thank you to one of our listeners who sent me a little gift this week. They sent me, I cannot believe, this has been a wonderful week for getting gifts. They sent me the world's largest puzzle, which I'd like to tell you about because this is something exceptional. I've never seen anything quite like it. It's excuse me, it is basically a piece of modern art. It's broken the 1996 Guinness World Record. It's a crossword puzzle. You just hang it on a full 7 foot by 7 foot, 2 meters by 2 meters, feet of wall space, and has 28,000 clues and over 91,000 squares on it. It is really something to see. It's a challenge that can take months, if not even years, to complete this crossword puzzle. We got it up here on the wall, and we've got 100 words filled in for the moment. We have no repeats, and we have no hints, and we're just like going for it on the like the lone wordsmiths. You know, it folds for a lap or a tabletop too, if you have to, because you can put this 4 foot thing around and shape it a little bit, and it can be tacked or taped to the wall, and it comes in this really strange storage box. Anyway, I want to say thank you very much for the world's largest puzzle. The Audiometric Wave Radio and CD Player. Yes, this radio delivers rich, full stereo sound with deep bass response, yet it is compact enough to fit on a night table or a desk. Its design is identical to the original Audiometric model, which was given the Best of What's New award by Popular and Unpopular Science magazine. This newer model now has a top-loading CD player with multiple play modes. Audiometric, designed with the Audiometric patented waveguide speaker technology, a 39-inch hollow tube of unprecise dimensions that acoustically enriches the sound. It creates concert hall lifelike sound that is comparable to that of larger, much more expensive stereo systems. Audiometric connects to a cassette player, television, or VCR, and includes a remote, 6 AM and FM presets, dual alarm clock, and comes in platinum gray. Available from the 1st of May, the Audiometric Wave Radio and CD Player. Specify graphite if you'd like graphite.
Amen. not seeing my friends. Musica. A lot of black smoke out there. Crazy.
I began to be able to sense things. Invisible things. I began to hear helicopters that were in the sky. They replaced the birds to move the clouds. Visible things. Visible things. I knew who had passed and in which direction they had been going, but all I could do is scratch and scratch and scratch. And the vote was approaching. The vote. And full and foul, and it could be smelled all around in every corner from every party. False. Tone hard. My ears, they burned. The lies, unnecessary, deceiving, but most unyielding. Being yours, being young, and it felt good. Like a summer day. It felt good. Scratching. Like a summer day. necessary, deceiving, and most unyielding. I was once out strolling one very fine hot summer's day when I thought I'd lay myself down to rest. In a big field of tall grass, I laid there in the sun, felt it caressing my face. I fell asleep and I dreamed I was in a Hollywood movie, that I was a star in the movie. This really blew my mind. The fact that me, a noble fit, long haired, leaping gnome, could be the star of a Hollywood movie. There I was taken to a place, Hall the Mountain King. Stood high upon the mountaintop, naked to the world, in front of every kind of girl. There were tall ones, short ones, tall ones, brown ones, black ones, round ones, big ones, crazy ones. Out of the middle, came lady. She whispered in my ears something crazy. She said, spill the wine, dig that girl, spill the wine, dig that girl, yeah. I could feel hot flames of fire rolling down my back. She disappeared, but soon she returned. In her hand was a bottle of wine, and the other one was a glass. She poured some of the wine from the bottle into the glass. She raised it to her lips. Just before she drank it, she said, take the wine, take that pearl, take the wine, take that pearl, take the wine, take the pearl, take the wine. I was once out strolling one very hot summer day. Thought I'd lay right down and rest. Big field, tall grass. Laid there in the sun, felt it caressing my face. Fell asleep, and I dreamed I was in a Hollywood movie. I was a star of the movie. Really blew my mind. Really blew my mind.
Let our three-voiced country sing in a new world. Joining the other rivers without dogma, but with friendliness to all around. Let her new river shine on a day that is fresh and glittering and contemporary. Let it be true to itself and to its origins. Inventive. Original. Philosophical. Its institutions mirror its beauty. Then, without shame, we can esteem ourselves. To its origins. Inventive, original, philosophical. Its institutions mirror its beauty. Then, without shame, we can esteem ourselves.
Pas une seconde.
Raven, if we were at war, and you were suddenly to become infatuated with the daughter of a Russian agent,
Thank you.
There's a storm blowing holes in the middle of the sky. Sun's burning down, think I'm gonna die. Riding on this wave in the middle of the land. Nothing to eat, just an ocean of sand. Sand, 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 sand. Dreaming about water, liquid to be saved. Think about the air, better to be brave. Brave, brave, brave. There's a storm blowing holes in the middle of the news. Papers burning up with the fire of blues. Cold wind blowing, really need a hand. Looking left and right, no one in command. Dreaming about the water, liquid to be saved. Thinking about the air, better to be brave. Brave, be brave, be brave, be brave, be brave, be brave. There's a storm blowing holes in the middle of my mind. Educated monsters are working overtime. City politicians got the meshes on the knees. Got us rushing around like a hive of fucking bees. Bees. Dreaming about my girl with the rose in her hair. Thinking about the days when I didn't need to care. Dreaming about my girl with the rose in her hair. Thinking about the days when I didn't need to care. There's a storm blowing holes in the middle of the sea. There's a ship spilling oil like a cancerous flea. Lightning strikes, neurons in my brain. Pull out the stops, I'll sink with the chain. Dream about the water, liquid to be saved. Think about the air, better to be brave. Brave. There's a storm blowing holes in the middle of the sun. There's a storm blowing holes in the middle of a gun. Storm blowing holes in the middle of the night. There's a storm growing fists in the middle of the fight. 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 Dreaming about my girl with the rose in her hair. Thinking about the day when I didn't need to care. Dreaming about the girl with the rose in her hair. Thinking about the day when I didn't need to care. Care, 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 care. Codependent, please ask someone to push 2 for you. If you have multiple personalities, press 3, 4, 5, and 6. If you are paranoid, we know who you are and what you want. Stay on the line so we can trace your call. If you are delusional, press 7 and your call will be transferred to the mothership. If you are schizophrenic, listen carefully and a small voice will tell you which number to press. If you are manic depressive, it doesn't matter which number you press, no one will answer. If you are dyslexic, press 96969696969696. If you have a nervous disorder, please fidget with the hash until a representative comes on the line. If you have amnesia, press 8 and state your name, address, phone number, date of birth, social security number, and your mother and grandmother's maiden names. If you have post-traumatic stress disorder, slowly and carefully press 000. If you have bipolar disorder, please leave a message after the beep, or before the beep, or after the beep. Please wait for the beep. Sex and drugs and rock and roll is all my brain and body needs. Sex and drugs and rock and roll is very good indeed. Keep your silly ways, throw them out the window. The wisdom of your ways, I've been there and I know. Lots of other ways, what a jolly bad show. If all you ever do is business you don't like. Sex and drugs and rock and roll. Sex and drugs and rock and roll. Sex and drugs and rock and roll. Is very good indeed. Every bit of clothing ought to make you pretty. You can count the clothing of Mr. Waller Pitty. I know the clothing of Mr. Waller Mitty. You should see my tailor. He's called Simon. I know it's going to fit. Every bit of clothing ought to make you pretty. You can count the clothing. Gray is such a pity. I should wear the clothing of Mr. Walter Mitty. You see my tailor. He's called Simon. I know it's going to fit. A bit of hairbrush. It's free.
We do nothing, we do it's cut price.
You know that'll make you be.
They will trick you with the divos.
Trap you with the ornament.
Get your teeth into a small slice.
The cake of liberty.
It's very good,
very good indeed.
Sex and drugs and rocks and rock and roll.
Sex and drugs and rocks and rock and roll.
Sex and drugs and rock and roll. Rock and roll.
It's very good indeed.
It's very good indeed. It's very good, it's very indeed. Good indeed.
Vous pensez que j'ai pu commettre des crimes, c'est insensé. Je possède une fortune telle que quoi que je fasse, je ne dépense pas mes revenus. Pourquoi maintenant deviendrais-je un criminel ? Vous pensez que j'ai pu commettre des crimes, c'est insensé. Vous pensez que j'ai pu commettre des crimes, c'est insensé. Je possède une fortune telle que quoi que je fasse, je ne dépense pas mes revenus. Pourquoi maintenant deviendrais-je un criminel ?
Le fanatisme politique ou religieux est immobile.
President. Et tout devient clair. Comme il le ferait lui-même observer, voyez comme tout s'explique par les faits. Nous comprenons non seulement pourquoi il s'est mis à la drogue, mais aussi sa méfiance envers les femmes, comme vous l'avez souvent décrit, docteur. Et aussi le choix de sa profession, démasquer les criminels et punir l'injustice. Je suis un physicien spécialisé dans les troubles de l'esprit, ce qui veut dire que dans ce cas, j'ai simplement emprunté à votre ami ses propres techniques. Et j'ai appliqué sur lui, comme il aurait fait. Vous vous souvenez, nous avons parlé de cette zone de l'esprit que j'ai appelée l'inconscient. Eh bien, c'est lui qui m'y a conduit. En fait, il m'a mis involontairement sur la piste. Je vais simplement vous citer une observation faite par un de vos dramaturges anglais, celui qu'il avait déduit être mon auteur favori. Nous sommes de l'étoffe dont sont faits tous nos rêves.
Nous sommes de l'étoffe dont sont faits tous nos rêves. Nous sommes de l'étoffe dont sont faits tous nos rêves.
The asthma attacks are coming on again. The top model weather forecaster is angling her cleavage aesthetically at me and telling me the danger level of pollution is at level number 2. Wheeze in the air, fantasize, wheeze it out. She licks her lips and the audience roars, publicity. Weather broadcast brought to you by UDF Nucléaire. Tax evasion will soon be an Olympic sport, supported by the lovers of Lady Di. Bombs going off all around the Mediterranean, kids disappearing everywhere. To what place do they finally go? To murder children of a special place in the eyes of an expanding universe. Wheeze! 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 In 40 years, the temperature will be 1 degree hotter here, and 7 degrees hotter on the poles. The doctor prescribed a month of pills and 2 Ventolin inhalers. 5 hits a day, she says. Too much adrenaline otherwise. 1 hour after attacks, I'm up to 4 inhalations. Breathe in. Waiting for the day when landmines will be planted instead of flowers in our country. Breathe out. Everything looks so much better around you when you're talking on a portable phone. It all fits into place. We're just diodes on the global map.